Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's overtime here on 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. It's the Youngest in Charge movement. Linnell Willingham taking you up to 10 o'clock. Commanders Saints coming up on Sunday. Washington fresh out of the bye week. And feeling like a group that's got a little bit of momentum all of a sudden. For just joining the show, Washington got some good injury news earlier today. It was announced by Dan Quinn that Marshon Lattimore would start Sunday for the Washington Commanders opposite of who, but we'll figure that out come Sunday. I have my guess as to who is going to get the start at corner opposite Marshon Lattimore, but he is scheduled to make his return, or debut rather, in the Commanders lineup this weekend on the road against the Saints. And we've talked about it leading up to his debut. There are a lot of benefits of adding Marshon Lattimore to the fold. It's not just one area where I think your defense improves. I think you improve pretty much at every level. And the big thing for Lattimore and Joe Witt Jr., the defensive coordinator of the Commanders, talked about this earlier this week. The one thing with Marshon that you got to make sure is that the communication is good, right? Is the communication good? Is there a situation where, you know, maybe they're trying to get into a check and Marshon, you know, was not able to pick it up because he hasn't been there, but only so long. So I do wonder how that impacts things. But I think Marshawn's a pro. Marshawn's a professional to where it ain't really going to matter too much. But I do think he's in a spot right now, talking about Lattimore, where he actually may have benefited. He actually may have benefited from not being able to play right away. If you got it ready, Vic, it is cut 10 from defensive coordinator Joe Witt Jr. From Thursday's press conference. It was Joe Witt Jr. giving some clarity on how bringing in a new member into your secondary, how it impacts communication. Take a listen.
That's a really good question. That's where the issue, not issue, but the stress point might be, because, like I said before here, you basically play the same techniques throughout the league. You know, it's three matches, cover three, it's quarters, it's palms. Now, once you get into your reduction calls or your checks, okay, understanding what certain checks might mean to me. You know, we might have a check that, let's use Marshon for example, that the same word might have meant something else for him in New Orleans. All right, Ed Page with the man is he's a smart football player now. I've been really, really pleased with his intelligence and the way that he communicates in the meeting room with the other players. But just making sure that, especially our reduction calls and our push calls, he has a firm understanding of it. Not just him, just the whole secondary. But he is the new addition, but he's extremely smart, man. I've been really pleased with that that part of him.
Joe Witt Jr. talking about communication and how that can potentially impact the ability for Marshon Lattimore to get quickly integrated into things. I just saw a video on the X app that I don't know if it's real or not. I guess it's got to be because it didn't have one of those community notes next to it. This is posted 18 minutes ago. I promise you, this is random. the Heisman ceremony is tonight, isn't it? Or is it tomorrow? I think it's tomorrow night. But right now, there's a video circulating online of Shador Sanders and Malik Nabers playing catch in the streets of New York, and Twitter is in a frenzy. Twitter's in an absolute frenzy. You know what's crazy about all of this, right? With Jaden coming into the NFC's balling, and then there's a rookie probably coming in next year for the Giants. Jalen Hurts clearly is not an elite quarterback, and Dak Prescott's always hurt. After 1 year, we're going to be talking about Jaden Daniels as the best quarterback in the damn division. Isn't that something? Isn't that something? I mentioned Joe Witt Jr., defensive coordinator of the Commanders, spoke. We heard what Cliff Kingsbury said he learned about the offense during the bye. It's cut number two, Vic, if you got it ready. Here's what Joe Witt Jr. said he learned about the defense during the team's bye week.
That we're still a unit that's growing and trying to play the play style that we want to play. We're close, but we're not consistent enough, and I got to do a better job of getting them consistent and making sure that in winning moments that we're ready to go. We started a lot of games really well. One thing that popped out to me was I think we're third in the league in the first quarter allowing points. We don't give up points, but in the fourth quarter, we're last in the league. We give up too many points in the fourth quarter. And so how do I shore that up? Is it the calls? Is it the situations? What is it that's allowing that to happen? And that's one area that we really looked at. We looked at the run game as well, okay? Once again, calls first, okay? Technique second, utilization of players third. And so those are things, those areas that we really stressed. And then ball production. We have to produce the ball some one way or another. We changed some drills this week, and hopefully that we will be able to produce the ball the way that we should.
Joe Witt Jr., giving his thoughts on the Commanders' defense coming out of the bye, he's always very honest in his assessment of the team at the podium. Love hearing him speak. But I think I got to agree, man. The consistency piece, to me, is the biggest thing right now, right? We've seen them play well in spurts. It's just about doing it for an entire 60 minutes of football. And it's been a while since they've done that. Right? Because I keep hearing, well, oh, the defense played so well against Philadelphia. Well, no, they didn't. In the fourth quarter, they got gashed. Right? And we've seen that on several different occasions this year. So much so where Washington leads the NFL in fourth quarter points given up. They're not good in the most important phases of the football game. They're not. And to me, it's pretty much a consistency issue. Good thing for Joe Witt Jr. He spoke on how Washington can get the defense to be more consistent. Let's cut number 13 if we got it ready. Joe Witt Jr. on the consistency of the Commanders' defense.
Well, it's just really when it gets to be a more consistent, it's understanding why we're calling what we're calling in certain situations. That's one. And then making sure that the communication is at an elite level, not at a good level, at an elite level. And once we're all on the same page, and when we're all, not once, but when we're all on the same page, we knock people back. The running hit of our defense, the play style, is what I want to see, okay? All right, we run and hit people, all right? What needs to happen is when we have the opportunity to produce a turnover, I think we counted the other day, William had more, but I had it wrong. I think it was 12 where we had the ball in our hands and we dropped 12 of them. Now we catch 8 of them. Now we're, you know, in the conversation of turning games around. That's part of consistency. And so, and we got to drill it and put them in the situation of, all right, flash catches. All right. Defensive players do not track the ball. So we have to make them and put them in positions to where, all right, they catch the flash of the ball. All right, they're catching more tips and overthrows and such as situations like that. So we have to expose them to those situations so we can get the ball from that standpoint. And then the communication, the walkthroughs, demanding it that it's loud, that it's sent, receive, acknowledge, and that we're all on the same page. That's where the consistency will come from.
Joe Witt Jr. telling it how a TI is relative to the consistency of his Commander's defense. Yeah, I mean, I agree with everything he said. The one thing that he's talked about all year long is their play style, right? They run and they hit people. I think as we get into the stretch run of the season, that stuff's going to be so much more important. setting the tone for who you are, being the aggressor in some of these cold football games, is going to be important. Now, if you're just now joining the show and you've been not tapped in with Sports Talk Radio today, let me give you some breaking news, as I'll call it. ESPN's Commanders beat writer, John Keim, reporting that the Commanders and Jonathan Allen are hopeful for a return prior to the end of the season. John Allen tore his pec in week 6 on the road against Baltimore. During his surgery, it was discovered that it was only a partial tear. So at that time, they began to think, oh, well, maybe he could come back before the end of the season. Things have ratcheted up here in the last month or so. Further checkups have shown there's a belief that a return is really possible. And clearly he would be a huge boost for Washington down the stretch, just ensuring that they get that run defense improved. And I think adding Lattimore helps him improve it. But you add John Allen into the fold, and now it's a whole different thing. The one thing I'll continue to say about this situation, sources say there's no guarantee, but John has been working out at the facility with an eye towards returning by the end of the month. So is that Philly? Is that Atlanta? I don't know. But the fact that this is on the table and it's being told to John Keim and he's reporting it must mean that, Commander fans, maybe we've been good all year long. We get Jonathan Allen under the Christmas tree. Wouldn't that be a hell of a gift for the Washington Commanders here in the stretch run of their season? Could you imagine if he's able to play against Philly next week? How big of an impact that would make potentially? And someone called earlier. I would rather have John Allen at 85% than have Shelton Day play. That's no offense to Shelton Day. It's just John. It's John's John. And I know John wasn't perfect. It wasn't the game record we were accustomed to seeing. But he's still a space eater and helps out Washington in a major, major area that they definitely could use a little bit of help with. Speaking of the defensive front for the Washington Commanders, we'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, a member of the Commanders D-line popped up on the injury report today. And newsflash, if you pop up on the injury report on a Friday, good chance you don't play. I'll tell you who popped up next. Welcome back. It is Overtime. 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. You know who by the rejoin? Guess who? Youngest in charge. Linnell Willingham. I'll take you up to 10 o'clock. About an hour and change left to go in the program. And right now we will take our talents out to the guest hotline where we find one of my absolute favorites, the host of the Locked On Commanders podcast, also a contributor for the Washington Commanders on WSA9.com. You can download the Locked On Commanders podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Our pal David Harrison. What's going on, Dave? How you doing, my brother?
What's up, man? Good to talk to you. Sorry for the confusion.
No, all good, man. It's been a while since I got to chop it up with you, man. NBA season in full tip. I know we talk Nuggets every now and then. Your boys went down to our other boys the other night. I know that was probably a good laugh for you. Let's get right into it, my friend. Washington coming out of the bye week with, you know, some expectations, I guess is the best way to put it here, David, for the final stretch run of the season. Four games left to go. A lot of folks are clamoring for 3-1 or bust. How do you think the final 4 weeks play out, and how likely do you think it is that this team's able to punch their ticket to the playoffs?
Yeah, I mean, I think they got a really good shot. You know, obviously, I mean, their playoff chances right now sit above, you know, 70%, and if they can get a win against New Orleans Saints, and that jumps, you know, well over 80%. And I think that, you know, there's a pretty strong possibility when you look at the schedule, and this game is certainly winnable. The Atlanta Falcons game is going to be a winnable game. Obviously, the Dallas Cowboys game is a winnable game, but speaking of the Cowboys, you know, just because the game is winnable doesn't mean that you're going to win it. And even that Eagles game, you know, honestly, I've watched a lot of Eagles football this year for one reason or another. And, you know, they're certainly not what I would call an unbeatable team. So, you know, there's a reality where this team goes 4-0, but this is the NFL, man. So there's also a reality where this team goes 0-4. I don't think either of those outcomes is actually likely. I think, you know, 3-1 or 2-2 is much more likely, but I think they've got a very good chance to do what a lot of people didn't expect them to be able to do coming into the season.
Yeah, I agree. I think you put it perfectly, my friend. They have outkicked their coverage to this point. And I believe that any way that they finish, David, should be deemed a success, man. It's been impressive to watch this group all year long, even during the three-game losing streak. You know, to see them come out on the other side of it against Tennessee, overcoming that adversity, shut me up because I had put a plastic fork in their playoff chances after the loss to Dallas, because it's one of those losses where, and I still feel this way, David, They broke my trust a little bit against Dallas. And hear me out, they had beaten the narrative on this team is that they beat the teams they're supposed to. They had the hiccup against Dallas, and it felt like, man, is the sky falling here? Obviously, they bounced back against Tennessee. The big reason they were able to bounce back, in my opinion, David, is the front five up front along this offensive line, the receivers and the tight ends. They all took it personally in the running game. Brian Robinson and Chris Rodriguez both nearly go for 100 yards. You know, no disrespect to the athlete that you are, David. You could have run for 100-plus yards behind the Commanders' offensive line against Tennessee. Talk about that group and how refreshed did they look against Tennessee, because it felt like during that losing streak, man, there was, I don't want to say a hesitancy coming off the football, but it just wasn't as violent and as nasty.
Yeah, I think they definitely kind of regained and recaptured their identity, you know, what you like about it is you hear the coaching staff talking openly about needing to do that ahead of that game. And then, you know, the players go out there and they do that. So it doesn't turn into, because, you know, we've seen versions of this team and versions of other teams around the NFL and just in sports in general, where coaches come out and kind of say that kind of stuff. Like, we need better effort. We need to get back to what we know how to do better. And players take it as, you know, well, we're being thrown under the bus or we're being insulted or whatever. They feel a certain kind of way about it, and they actually come out and play more disjointed or more, you know, out of sync. And this team didn't do that. This team heard what their coaches had to say, and they went out there and they put it on the field, you know. And I think Jaden looked like he was kind of back in his groove. The defense looked pretty good. You know, I think the defense has been getting better over the course of the season, and unfortunately it's kind of gotten buried as a storyline because of the losses that came in. But, you know, at the end of the day, like Dan Quinn said in the beginning of his tenure here, there's an identity that this team wants to have, and win, lose, or draw, they want everybody to be able to watch a Washington Commanders game and come out of that game saying they played Washington Commanders football. And, you know, a little bit against the Eagles, certainly against the Cowboys, and then in moments against the Steelers, you know, Commanders football wasn't what you saw. And that's where some of the frustration and like you said, some of the trust, the goodwill that had been built up, you know, if it got lost among people, that's where it would come. And I think that the players and the coaches understand those kinds of things happen. But they also understand that you go out there and put a whooping on the Titans, put a whooping on the Saints, and that goodwill and that trust comes back. So, you know, it's all about going out there and getting those wins. You know, there's a saying where winning cures all. I don't know if winning cures all, but winning takes away a lot of attention from a lot of things. We didn't care that Terry McLaurin was lining up split wide left, you know, 75%+ of the time until they started losing and Terry McLaurin started getting shut out of the game, right? Like, so that just kind of shows that it's not that Terry McLaurin, you know, lined up all over the field against Tennessee Titans, because he didn't. He was still lined up split wide left over 70% of that game. Right. But it doesn't matter when it's effective.
I agree with you 100%, my man. One thing that I've noticed here, when you talk about the identity of this offense, clearly, and I think we saw this in camp, even when Jaden was looking good, I continue to say it to you and others, man, like, you know, it looks good throwing the football, but their identity this year, man, the sweet spot is him throwing it, you know, 25, 27 times per contest, because they got to establish the running game. They've been able to do that in the first 9 weeks, man. They came out like gangbusters up front running the football. But the one thing I've noticed, David, and tell me if you picked up on this, certain defensive tackles that felt like gave this team trouble. I noticed the quick, twitchier guys on the interior that can penetrate and get upfield. It hurts a team that wants to run counter and inside zone a lot, because you get your mesh point ruined. And then you saw them kind of counter that against Tennessee, running more gap stuff against a bigger, you know, more hulking defensive front. As we go down the stretch here, and I'm looking ahead to that second matchup – against Philly and then the second matchup against Dallas. What do you think is going to be Washington's counter to these quick interior defensive linemen? Because it feels like that's what's been their undoing in the run game. You saw that against Pittsburgh as well.
Yeah, you know, people are going to like hearing me say this, but right now I don't know if the team really has a counter to be able to defeat that. It's more so you've got to play around it. You know what I mean? You just have to kind of understand that that's one of your Achilles heel. That's something that can beat you. You know, you saw the Philadelphia Eagles be able to do that, and something that the Philadelphia Eagles did, I think, you know, even better than, say, like the Steelers did, is they were able to do it with the kind of the organic front. They didn't have to stack boxes. They didn't have to bring extra pressure, and it allowed them to keep coverage spread across the field to help them keep, you know, three guys around Terry McLaurin at all times. And when you can't defeat that type of upfront pressure and you can't establish that power run game, you know, you talked about it. That's something I've been kind of harping on. Like, this team isn't just a run first team, they're a power run first team. You know, when Austin Eckler and Jeremy McNichols have obviously, you know, loads of talent, you know, to be talked about themselves, but what we've seen just the way this team operates and the way the defenses attack them, those two guys by themselves just can't establish this run game the way that they need to, and it doesn't impact defenses enough to free up Jaden to do all the things he needs to. You need a guy like Brian Robinson Jr., Chris Rodriguez Jr., and the two opportunities he's really had this season has shown capable to do that. So we'll see if, you know, maybe he gets a little bit more run as the season goes on, because, again, that's pretty clearly when this offense gets to its best point is when the power rush is moving. You know, when Brian Robinson averages 4 yards per carry or more a game, the Commanders are undefeated. And that's not a coincidence, you know what I mean? Establishing that presence, where does Jaden Daniels do his most damage as an extra athlete, right? He obviously is very good in the pocket when he has time and just like any other talented quarterback, but where he has that extra level to attack a defense is when he can escape, and he doesn't usually escape up the middle, he escapes outside. Well, if your defense doesn't need to collapse the middle to account for Brian Robinson, then they have extra defenders to try to bottle up Jaden. If they're having to collapse into the box, to try to stop B-Rob because he's ripping off 4-plus yards per carry, now Jaden's going to have those angles and those opportunities to run outside, and that's where things really get difficult for opposing defenses. So, you know, they all go hand in hand, and so that's the identity of this team. So if they can't establish that, they come up against the defensive front. We're going to see it in a couple weeks, you know, when the Philadelphia Eagles come back to town. We're going to see it, man. Like the Philadelphia Eagles didn't stack the box once against Brian Robinson Jr. that first game. And to me, that's just amazing that a defense would, have the willingness to try it. You know what I mean? Like, applaud Vic Fangio for having faith in his unit for not even trying it, but two, have success at it. And, again, so we'll see. Again, you know, I think you just kind of are what you are at this point in time, so I don't know if there's a way for the Commanders to say, no, we're just going to dominate the inside, you know, on the line of scrimmage against Philadelphia Eagles. They are who they are. This team is who they are. So it's more so about play design and how do we counter the fact that we know that they can stop our rushing attack with their organic front four. We've got to come out with a plan to go ahead and do other things to detract from that. I've got some ideas on what this team could do. Some of the things they did against Tennessee Titans, I think, certainly could help that, where you're running Terry McLaurin. You know, he might be lined up outside, but he actually ends up kind of your second or third inside route in the route tree. Those types of things that they could be effective, and they keep the defense from really kind of spreading out as much. But, you know, we'll see what Cliff Kingsbury draws up, and when they get to that point, what they're going to do. But I think it's just one of those things that opposing defenses know if they can control the line of scrimmage, they can clog the middle against B-Rob, that they have a better opportunity to beat this Commanders offense.
Joined right now by our guy David Harrison, host of the Locked On Commanders podcast. You can get that wherever you get your podcasts. Also, make sure you check out his contributions to WSA9.com as well. David, perfect transition and segue, my brother. You mentioned, and I feel bad just looking over the Saints, but they better win Sunday against New Orleans or else any Philly conversations are a moot point. But I want to ask you about the Eagles one more time here. When they get geared up for that matchup, they're going to do it without Noah Brown, who went down in the Tennessee game, and obviously the injury was thought to be just a rib injury at first. Obviously, further testing has revealed, you know, more damage here. You're going to be without him most likely, or him for sure against Philly. And then your leading receiver last time against the Eagles was Austin Eckler. So you're not going to have him in that game either. What is your concern level for Washington being able to replicate that production that they're losing from Eckler and Noah Brown, because it's about a third of their offensive production?
Yeah, that's a tough question to answer. There's a lot of kind of like good ideas that you could roll out with. I'm actually working on a full blown episode where I'm literally going to go over like 5 or 6 different options that the Washington Commanders have in front of them, and you know, those are just the 5 or 6 that I can fit into a 25-minute episode. So the minds that coaching staff has with Anthony Lynn and Brian Johnson and Cliff Kingsbury and beyond, like, they're going to have even more ideas.
Right.
The trick is, I think this team's got to do something that they know they can execute and get creative without getting cute, right? Mm-hmm. Because you can hurt yourself a lot more in a lot of different ways. And how you do that against the Philadelphia Eagles is obviously one part of the equation, but this first week without him is a big part of it. And you kind of need to go out there and kind of test drive some of these ideas while you obviously need to win the game as well. So there's kind of this balance of, we got to do what we know we're good at, but we also need to try to figure out what this new world of Washington Commanders offense really means without Noah Brown on the field. And, you know, how much of that is De'Ami Brown? How much of that is Olamide Zaccheaus? How much of that is, you know, you could see this team just go really just dedicate even more to the power attack. Maybe, you know, that's where Chris Rodriguez gets a little bit more burn, as maybe he and B-Rob try to come out with a game plan where they're going to combine for 25, 26 touches. And, you know, you can't just come out with a game plan and say, we're going to hand you the ball 25 times. Obviously, right, how they do on first down and where they are in relation to the sticks obviously impacts that. But, you know, the more they control the ball on the clock, on the ground, the better off they're going to be overall. I think my expectation, if I have one, is a quicker passing game. Yeah. Jaden has always been really good making those quick decisions, get the ball out quicker. I think Olamide Zaccheaus provides you more dynamic ability than a guy like De'Ami Brown. De'Ami Brown, during his career, has kind of proven to be just a little bit more one-dimensional of a receiver. And the problem you really have is there is nobody that does what Noah Brown does. Mm-hmm. You know, like Noah Brown, he's not Jamar Chase, you know what I mean? He's not like A.J. Brown or anything like that. But when you just look at this roster, there is no one-for-one Noah Brown ability replacement. So, you know, Olamide brings, I think, a little bit more of the quicker ability, the fast switch ability, the short yardage area ability to potentially, if you can free him up in space, get some yak. De'Ami Brown obviously has some deep ball ability and has shown that over the years. Luke McCaffrey has flashed here in moments. Obviously, he's played more in the slot than he has outside. And then in the running back room, talking about Austin Ekeler, like, you just don't have that guy, you know, so it's another guy that you don't have a one-for-one replacement. So this is why Cliff Kingsbury gets paid what he does. You know, he's known as a very creative coordinator. I think where people get frustrated with Cliff is he kind of gets really creative and then sticks with what he's created until he's forced by opposing defenses to create new things. Well, this isn't a situation where the defense is doing it, but, you know, I don't see the ability for this team to come out and do what they did while they had Austin, had Noah, try to do that without Austin, without Noah, and have the same level of success. So I think to a certain extent, Cliff kind of has to be pushed into creating a new dynamic to his offense. But again, you can't reinstall everything, right? So you've got to install it in increments. And so we'll see how they do it this first week. If it works this first week, then I think we have a better idea of what they might try to do moving forward. If it doesn't work this week, then, you know, we'll have this conversation again about how do you now come up with some new ideas. One idea is, I mean, this might be a situation, man, where you see Terry, you know, line up left 60%, line up right 40%. I mean, the Saints don't travel, right? Their secondary lines up, they line up, they play their coverage, they make their checks and their calls. So if Terry is doing better lined up on the right side against a guy like Kool-Aid McKinstry than he is on the left side, take advantage of it. Continue to line him up on the right side and let him eat. You know what I mean? Let him go out there and force the Saints to adjust. If Terry is eating on the left, then maybe you continue to let him do that and save that right side, you know, Terry McLaurin look for the Philadelphia Eagles game. That's when you might see that unveiled. So sometimes when you have these deficiencies, the best thing to do is to find more ways to use your best guy versus trying too hard to find a second guy. So Terry kind of becomes your number one and your number two. It's just where you line them up.
For sure.
Zach Ertz, you know what I mean? Ben Sinnott.
Yeah, that's the one to me, man.
For his potential to potentially get unlocked. Like, yeah, man, that's, I mean, there's a lot of what ifs, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? So I'm going to cover a lot of it on an episode I'm doing this weekend. But none of it is the good thing, right, mm-hmm. for the Commanders is I can't tell you and nobody can tell you this is what they're going to do to replace Noah Brown and Austin Ekeler. Right. And so if nobody can tell you that, that includes the New Orleans Saints.
Very true. Very true, David. I'll I'll get testy and spicy here to let before we let you go, my friend. And this is just my true beliefs, but I've caught some flack for it throughout the last couple of weeks. I continue to feel like, for as great as the start was, and for as good as it feels to be 8-5, I understand the context of being ahead of schedule, year one of a rebuild, all of that. You got the quarterback, you got some foundational pieces, all that is fine. But when it comes to the NFC playoff picture, David, and we talk about this team being able to go on the road and win a postseason game, I think every team that they'd be matched up with can do the thing really well that Washington can't stop, and it's their biggest Achilles heel, in my opinion. This run defense, for whatever reason, just has not been able to get figured out, whether it's on the perimeter, whether it's on the interior. Feels like there just hasn't been any consistency in that area. How big, yeah, when you look big picture here, how much of an impact do you think that run defense is going to ultimately have down the stretch and into the postseason?
Yeah, run defense is massive in the postseason. I mean, run defense is massive just in general. I think, you know, we're starting to see that swing a little bit back to where the NFL really, you know, the best teams in the league know how to control the clock, know how to control the ball on the ground and execute a really solid run game. So that's not just this year. That's kind of been coming, you know. That's where you have to give credit to teams like the Ravens and the Eagles for going out and getting running backs when, you know, every offseason for like the last five, it seems like we've got star running backs kind of speaking out about how undervalued that position really is. It's become incredibly valuable. So for the Washington Commanders, they've got to try to figure it out. But again, you know, you're I don't want to say handcuffed, right? But you're limited to the guys that you have, because at this stage in the game, like, there's no, you know, elite run defender that's waiting for a job. You know what I'm saying? So I think that's why you saw Carl Davis, you know, get elevated against Tennessee Titans. Fedarian Mathis becomes a healthy scratch, because Fedarian, you know, I think he's done better this year than a lot of people expected. He's certainly taken some steps in a lot of places, but where he hasn't really taken those steps is as a run defender. And you look at a guy like Big Phil, and you kind of say, okay, that should be something that you're very solid at. So you put a guy like you put a veteran who's kind of been around a little bit longer, you know, up there. I mean, he's not, you know, Chris Jones or anything like that by any means, but you put him out there, and look, there could be, you know, something unlocked and Fedarian kind of being able to watch it on tape from somebody else. You know, we talk about guys like Bryce Young sitting and watching Andy Dalton prepare and lead as a starter and go out there and do some things, and Bryce Young comes back better. And how much of that was, you know, him being able to step away from it a little bit, how much of that was what he learned from the veteran. I don't know if you can ever really truly quantify it, yeah, but it certainly has some merit to it. So who knows? Maybe Fedarian comes back from watching another guy do it a little bit better, and those things get better. But it's not just on one person either. I think, you know, that's the important thing to remember, is we all see the healthy scratch from a former second round pick, and we say, well, it's, you know, he's the guy, but he's not the guy. He's just a guy, right? And right, there's certainly times on film where you can see Dorrance Armstrong over pursue and give up a backside cut. Yep. You know, Dante Fowler. I mean, there's not a player, you know, Bobby Wagner. I can tell you that I've turned on tape and I see Bobby Wagner out of a fit, right? Yeah. So nobody's completely innocent. The question really is, a lot of times, is, okay, when you're the guy out of position, does it actually hurt your team or not? So yep. That's part of it again, right? It's not a problem unless it's a problem. So
it's hard to have every guy in every
this weekend. What's that?
It's hard to have every guy in the correct gap, yeah, on every play. Yeah. It's just not realistic. Look,
the offense is out there literally trying to clear gaps, right?
Right.
Like yeah, you as a defender, like you have your gap to fill, but the offense is intentionally either by design trying to pull you out of your gap with the look that they're giving you, or shove you out of the gap with the guy that they're throwing at you. Yeah. So yeah, so I mean, you know, you know, every offensive player knows that you want to fill those gaps, so they're trying to clear those gaps out. So, you know, so certainly people are going to lose. You know, with a guy like Alvin Kamara, you know, this week, and a guy like Saquon Barkley, the gap discipline becomes even more important. And the problem with both of those guys, man, like you saw against the Eagles, right? 3.5 quarters, that defense, yep, just played, you know, lights out. But it only takes twice, right? It only takes two times to get out of position. You know, the first rushing touchdown, it was Dorrance Armstrong that over-pursues and gets washed out of the play. Saquon Barkley finds a backside cut and takes off for a touchdown. You know what I mean? And Dorrance had a very solid game other than that rep, and it kind of goes back to the Steelers game, right? Benjamin St. Juice had a relatively solid game except for that one rep that gave up the big touchdown. Like, it's not making the mistakes in the critical moments. You know, every player wants to be able to do it. And at the same time, it also speaks to complimentary football, right? If the offense is putting up points and the Eagles got to put the ball in Jalen Hurts' hand instead of in Saquon Barkley's hands, then those mistakes are obviously less likely to be made. And it's a little bit easier to play defense when you have a better idea of what your opponent is going to try to do. So, you know, it all goes hand in hand. But as far as like a solidified answer on how it is going to get fixed, sometimes you have the dude, sometimes you don't. And that's what this season has been all about from the beginning, is figuring out who's really going to fit the mold and who's not going to fit the mold. At the end of the season, they're going to look back at it and say, all right, who are the guys that got beat in run fits because it just happens sometimes? And who are the guys that get beat in run fits because they don't fit what we're asking them to do? Those guys are going to be gone. The other guys are going to continue to get trained and coached and worked on, and they're going to try to go bring in guys that fit better. The other side of this competition, man, honestly, you look at the New Orleans Saints defense. I actually just had this conversation with Logan Paulson today. The Saints defense, you're going to look at the Saints defense. If everything goes the way it's supposed to go, quote unquote, you're going to look at the Saints defense coming out of it. If you're a Commanders fan, you're going to say, man, the Saints defense is not very good. But the actual truth to it is the Saints have a lot of good players.
Yes,
the Saints have a lot of very talented players that are playing out of position. They're essentially doing things that they're not really skilled to do. You look at a guy like Brian Bracee specifically, he's a guy that I really enjoyed watching at Clemson coming out of the NFL draft and really liked what his potential was in the NFL. They're asking him to play much more of a strength-based, anchor-based defense, where he is a speed off the ball, you know, penetration, hit you in the mouth type of guy. They're asking him to play kind of outside of what his skill set really asked him to play. And he's not the only one. So, you know, there's a talent aspect of it. There's a coaching aspect of it. What you like about this defense is this staff knows what they're looking for. When it comes time to evaluate these guys at the end of the season, whenever that comes, they're going to know if this player fits the mold and is someone we can work with or not. And then they're going to go in search of finding guys to replace the ones that aren't with guys that are.
David, appreciate you giving us some time, man. We'll do it again soon.
Yes, sir, man. Appreciate you.
That is David Harrison, also the Locked On Commanders podcast. You can download that wherever you get your podcast. We'll take a quick timeout. When we come back, there is a member of the Commanders defense that popped up on the injury report today. Normally, that doesn't mean good things for your status on game day. We'll tell you who next. Welcome back. It is Overtime, 106.7 The Fan. We're always streaming live nationally on the free Odyssey app. Youngest in Charge Movement, Linnell Willingham, will take you up to 10 o'clock. Wizards and Cavs in action. It's all of a sudden funny, right? Wizards have been relatively uncompetitive all year long. They upset the Nuggets a couple of weekends ago. Was it last weekend? Then they got blown out by the Grizzlies the very next night. They're now on the road against the Cleveland Cavaliers, 21-4, best record in the association. Down 7 heading into the fourth quarter, but they've held the Cavs to just 87 points. Really impressive defensive effort tonight from the Wiz. Cleveland shooting just 38% from the field and just 27% from beyond the arc. Alex Saar playing really well on both ends of the floor. Wizards moving the basketball. The only issue is the turnovers probably for Washington, but outside of that, man, it's been good to see. I think the biggest development of tonight is it had been a while, right? He obviously got off to a really good start to start the season, but he went into a little bit of a cold spell. Bilal Coulibaly, 7 of 14, 3 of 5 from beyond the arc, 6 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 blocks. He leads all scorers with 19 points. Stat sheet stuff and performance, but to see his offensive game get back on track is huge. He came out to start the regular season like gangbusters the first three nights, but has cooled off. Good to see his offense back under full swing here. So Bilal Coulibaly, big part of this Washington Wizards rebuild. If they're going to expedite this process, he's got to turn into somebody on the offensive end. I mentioned, teased it a couple of times going into the break. The Commanders in New Orleans on Sunday had a pretty significant injury pop up on the injury report today. And this guy was a DNP with a back injury. And normally I'll just say this, when you pop up on the injury report on Friday after practicing all week long and then you're a DNP, the odds of you playing truly get diminished. And against the Saints, this guy was definitely going to be needed. Daron Payne did not practice today. It popped up on the injury report with a back injury. And if he cannot play Sunday against New Orleans, a team that is going to run, I'm telling you what. They're gonna if they don't turn the football over and shoot themselves in the foot and make it impossible for them to do so, they're gonna run the ball 30 plus times Sunday. Talking about the Saints. That's what they do. Top 10 in the NFL in rushing offense. Top 13 in the NFL in terms of rush yards per contest. They're a good group, and Alvin Kamara is a special back. Now, they're a little beat up on offense. At quarterback, up front, receiver, you name it. They've just been – attrition's been crazy over there. Not having Daron Payne makes this challenge a lot more difficult. And some folks probably look at you and say, well, no, it wasn't really a big of a challenge from the get-go. And I can agree with that, right? Saints are not a good football team. But there are some things that they do well, and what they do well, we struggle with, and that is stopping the run. So with Daron Payne popping up today with a back injury on this injury report, his status is officially listed as questionable. But his status, I would have to believe, is very much up in the air right now when it comes to whether or not he's going to play Sunday or not. If he doesn't play Sunday, I would have to think Fedarian Mathis will not be a healthy scratch this week the way he was against Tennessee. But, yes, Johnny Newton's got to step up. And we mentioned John Allen potentially coming back here soon. If you don't have Payne Sunday, man, God, I don't want to. They'd break my damn heart. If they go to New Orleans Sunday and somehow piss down their leg, it'd break my heart. There's just no way. I just don't see a scenario in which it happens, but with you missing a third of your offensive production, no Noah Brown, no Austin Ekeler, you're now potentially without Daron Payne. I don't know. We'll see. Final hour of power coming up here on this Friday night edition of Overtime. We'll keep you up to speed on the fourth quarter of the Washington Wizards when we get back. Thursday Night Football, an absolute doozy between the Rams and the San Francisco 49ers. One team's season is probably over. One team looks like the hottest team in the NFL. And there was some controversy mixed in with it all. We'll get to it next here on The Fan.